Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
This episode of Unlocked is brought to you by Chegg Study. Welcome to Unlocked. It's the world's number one Xbox show right here at IGN. It's episode 360, a number that has a fondness in the hearts of a lot of Xbox fans. So what special thing could we do? Well, we brought a guest. We brought someone whose Xbox roots trace back to the 360 development-wise. Ralph Fulton, the creative director from Playground Games, is going to be here talking about Forza Horizon 4, which is on the way in less than 30 days. Also, plenty of Xbox news happening. A new special edition Xbox One console, as well as a new special edition Elite controller on the way. Plus, some interesting words from Sony on crossplay and whether or not we might see Xbox players and PlayStation players ever playing together, and a lot more. But before we get started, a quick reminder, you can now catch Unlocked 24 hours early, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. If you come to our website, watch the video of the show, unlocked.ign.com. It'll hit YouTube and podcast channels 24 hours after that. So come hang with us a little earlier than you would if you want to get your Unlocked fix right away. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. To my right, Tom Marks. At the end, Miranda Sanchez. All the people you know. And to my immediate left, the aforementioned Ralph Fulton. It's so great to have you here, Ralph.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's lovely to be here.
Yeah.
We were just saying we get the opportunity to do this every
2 years.
Pretty much on the dot. Every 2 years
every
on the
dot. 2 years. Until the schedule changes. You know, you never know. But for now, every 2 years. And I super appreciate you coming out. Going to be hopefully checking out the game at some point soon. I mean, in less than 30 days at the worst. But yeah, it's great to have you here. And I mean, there's so much I want to ask you about. So first of all, on Horizon 4, this is the fourth go round for you and your team. The Horizon is, when's the 10th anniversary of Horizon?
So not for a while, I think.
Really?
If you're counting from the launch of the first Horizon,
yeah,
which came out 2012.
Oh, that was
2012.
Okay. So we're not there yet.
We've got a little bit of time to plan that party.
But I guess maybe when was the studio formed? That's got to be getting close, right?
We're closer to that. We were formed early 2010.
Okay.
So
yes, that's coming up.
So yeah. I guess January next year, I'll be in there 9 years.
Wow.
And then it's the year after that, I guess we need to start thinking about some kind of celebration.
Yes.
Because that's a pretty momentous achievement.
So Horizon it started excellent and has turned, I think, from an excellent game into very quickly from 1 to 2, the leap to generationally amazing car game, not just a racing game. How are you sitting now? Four of these games in, how do you feel about four? Did you accomplish everything you wanted to? You know, I guess you guys know you probably have 2 years on most projects. Are you able to sort of check everything off the list, or is there always sort of that list of things that you got to bump to next time?
I kind of wish we were that organized that we just had a list that we were working through, but it's not, we're not. And also it's kind of not how the creative process works.
Yeah.
To your earlier point, I think we are super proud of the trajectory that, you know, you mentioned and that the Horizon games have described, and that the second one was better than the first, and the third one was better than the second, and that's a good direction to be going in. I'll tell you a story about not quite this time, maybe a little bit later, 2 years ago, after we had launched Forza Horizon 3, and obviously I did a ton of interviews after the fact. And
sure.
Lots of things had gone really well about Forza Horizon 3.
That's putting it modestly.
Launch, and I guess as a result, the one question that absolutely everybody asked me was, how are you going to top that?
I think I was one of those people that...
I think you were, yeah.
How can you not ask that? Just like, it's so good. Like, what do you do?
I think we gave Horizon 3 a 9.5, if I recall correctly.
Oh, how are we going to top that?
There's not, you got 0.5 left to play with.
There's not a massive amount of headroom, yeah. But yeah, and I think the honest answer back then was I just didn't know. I didn't know how we would top that. But I had this confidence in our team that we could. And what I'm really excited about doing this kind of tour that I'm on at the moment, which is really giving a bunch of people the game for the first time. And, you know, tomorrow you're going to get the chance to play the first hour, a couple of hours of the game, is I feel great about where Forza Horizon 4 is in terms of quality, in terms of, you know, what we set out to try and do and how we set out to try and move the series forward with it. Already the feedback that I'm getting from this tour is that we have done that thing that people asked me how we would do, and I wasn't sure how we would do. I have, you know, so much belief in the talent and the hard work of the team back at Playground that even though we didn't really know how we were going to do it back then, we have done.
I mean, your team, to be clear, because we spend basically every time Horizon or you guys come up, I mean, all the time is Playground are full of wizards. That's basically what the Playground is to me. And I mean that. I people know I'm very sincere about that. I'm not like playing anything up.
I mean, yeah, we say like, how can you top it? And then you show us Forza Horizon 4 and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, all right.
I guess we'll see more. There's always something.
The to give people maybe a little context, can you share the background of your team and yourself? Like, it's Codemasters veterans, and I think you have some, Bizarre Creations folks from the Project Gotham days, or it's like there's a lot of racing expertise and experience on your team, is there not?
There is, and that was something. So we certainly played on that a lot in the early days, because when you're a new studio with no track record,
you kind of have to
conjure, you know, some track records, some experience from somewhere. And yeah, absolutely. You know, the guys with whom we founded the studio right back at the start, back in 2010, as we were just discussing, we all came from Codemasters. We'd made a bunch of games together. But I think the honest answer to your question today is that the experience and the track record of the team is in making Horizon games, and that experience is probably more widespread through the studio than, you know, any of the other sort of DNA that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And also, it's far, far more important when it comes to thinking about, well, in this case, hey, what's Forza Horizon 4 going to be? Having people that had made 1, 2, and 3 was this enormous you know, foot up in that thinking process, much more than, oh, hey, you know, oh, I made, you know, a game called Grid in 2008.
Right.
You know that's so far back, it's kind of ancient history in a ton of ways. But certainly the breadth of experience that we've built over those last 8 and a bit years at Playground is what allows us to continue on relatively short timescales, topping ourselves.
Do you find...
I just heard that.
Do you find that... Because, I mean, okay, every company, every industry has turnover, and some more than others. Do you guys have, I don't know if you can even compare it to other studios you've worked at, maybe. Is there a lot of continuity on the team? Are there a lot of long-term veterans at Playground that have been there for a while? Or do you find that you, I mean, is it still kind of the normal turnover? But I'm just kind of curious, like, yeah, how sort of together has this team been? How long have they been together?
So... And that's what I'm getting at. So
yeah.
there are so many people who have been here for, well, here's how I know. We do this thing, which is not, you know, unusual in the industry, but when someone's been with us for 5 years, we kind of do it. You know, there's a little plaque you get for 5 years, and there's, you know, you get a gift, and that's kind of nice. We have so many people with those plaques on their desks now, right? There is such, a large number of people within the team who have been here for not just a Horizon game, but for multiple Horizon games. And then there's so many that have been here, like, for all of them, you know, which is brilliant in a number of ways. I mean, just yesterday on Twitter, a designer who we hired into his first job in the industry right back quite early in Horizon 1. Tweeted that it was his 7th anniversary in the industry and at Playground, and I guess, you know, working on Horizon games. Yeah. And that kind of longevity and that kind of built up, you know, knowledge and experience, and I guess to an extent muscle memory, is incredibly important. You know, when we start to think about, okay, what's the next game going to be? Where are we in this particular aspect or this particular aspect? How can we continue to improve and innovate?
Yeah. Are you at the point where you effectively take bets on what the lowest review score is going to be? Like, oh, no. Maybe somebody's going to give us an 85. Maybe.
we do not do that, and I hope we never do.
I'm pulling your leg, obviously, but I mean, do you pay? Are you someone that pays attention to review scores? Some developers I talk to do, and some don't.
We are. We absolutely are. Yeah.
I guess when they're good, they're easier to pay attention.
It's a much easier habit to be in when they keep going up. I think we live in a very different world today than maybe we did 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, you know, when we ran about the time we started Playground. There are many, many more metrics by which you would judge a game's success, and, you know, the way games are anticipated and consumed and fed back on is wildly different from how it was in the 360 generation that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But I still think, you know, we still make a big deal of, you know, giving out review codes and, you know, sort of making that process happen. And I think that kind of implies, you know, we still really value the feedback we get from that and that therefore it's of importance. And I know it's of importance to our development team, you know, who pride themselves on producing really high quality stuff and producing higher quality work this time than they did last time. Sure. And that's a way of measuring just how successful you've been in that regard.
What comes first with Horizon? Is it the location? And this time around, it's the UK, it's Britain, or are there sort of key gameplay themes that you sort of start with? I'm just sort of curious where you guys tend to jump off from.
It's so there's definitely not a linear thing like that. People always ask about location because it's the most obvious point of differentiation from the last time. Like, oh, hey, last time you were in this place and this time you're in this place.
Yeah.
It's really obvious that's a big thing. It's also a decision we have to make really, really early because so much comes from it. So, you know, so much work cascades from that that decision. So we have to make the decision on location really early in terms of the development cycle so that we can get folks out researching.
You know, sure.
Like in the field so that we can start thinking about the design of the world map, which will start as a 2D thing, it'll move into 3D, and we'll start building it out from there. And that process is, you know, it's difficult to shorten. So you
told
to
me, yeah, for Horizon, I wonder if there are any stories, interesting tech stories like this for Horizon 4, because I remember you told me a story about Horizon 3 where you sent a couple of, I suppose it might have been artists, to go with some crazy camera apparatus and capture the skies of Australia for like some ridiculous time lapse, and then of course they looked amazing in the game. Is there?
Yes.
Do I have that right? And is
you
there?
You totally have. You're almost. Yeah, that's fine.
And so I'll what about for you. Four? Yeah,
I'll level with you. It wasn't just you. I told. So
fair enough. I mean,
some people also heard that story, and it was entirely true. It was the artists within our sort of lighting team who are, you know, quite a very specialized sub team within the huge art department we have at Playground. So we've done the same again, which was easier in some regards because we're in the UK, we're in Britain, you know, so it's familiar. It's also very much, much more local than Australia, and therefore easier to get to. But this time, obviously, a huge, huge feature of Forza Horizon 4 is dynamic seasons.
Yes, and that's your hook.
We made the decision very early on that we would need to go and do the sky capture process that we did on 3 in each of the 4 seasons because the, you know, at the most basic level, the arc of the sun is very different season on season on season, which affects everything about the quality of light, the direction of the light, the way the world looks really when that, you know, correct lighting information is just injected into the sort of physically modeled world that, that we create these days. So, yes, it was closer, but it was more difficult because we had to do it four different times. And, you know, one of those times was winter. So that kind of sucked.
Yeah.
In a sort of an experience point of view for those people. But
it was no vacation like it was on the Australia trip. Huh?
So, again, I'm sure I told you, I'm not sure how much of a vacation that was in Australia, but certainly being on the, you know, the Yorkshire moors in the middle of winter filming the sky is... You won't find that in a brochure.
So I have to ask you about something our team saw in your Gamescom behind closed doors demo. You tell me about this little Halo Easter egg mission that you've got and sort of how it came about. You know, I know you're going to tell me necessarily exactly. We'll let people experience it for themselves. But where'd it come from? Who came to who? Yeah, I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the sort of Halo X Forza crossover thing goes back years and years, right?
Yeah.
The Halo, the Warthog first appeared in Forza Motorsport 4, I want to say.
Yeah, in the you could just look at it in
Forza
Vista.
Yeah. Which so that, you know, that was the, I guess, the intersection point between the two franchises in that regard. You might remember, so we had the Warthog in 3, and almost as a way of explaining why we've got the Halo Warthog, we kind of felt that we should, you know, create some kind of experience around it in Forza Horizon 3. So we had the bucket list feature, and we created a little sort of Halo nostalgia bucket list experience using the Warthog and a little bit of piece of music from Halo 4 or 5, I want to say, I can't remember which. And really that was it. You drove the Warthog in Australia, the music played, and we were like, hey, Halo. And then so that was that. And there was no, I don't think there was like, oh, we should do something more. But you're familiar with the showcase feature that we've had right since the start of the Horizon games, which kind of started off, like, you know, back in 2011, 2012 as our take on the kind of like crazy experiences that, you know, Top Gear of old used to do.
Racing jets.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously that sort of inspired the thought process of how could we do something similar and maybe a little bit outlandish and different. And since then, showcases have become like a signature feature of ours. You know, like we always do showcases. We always try and plus up the showcases, you know, in the current game from what we've done previously. And as a result, it gets harder and harder to think of the thing you're going to race against.
yeah.
You know, like...
speeding train, blimp, wait.
yeah, like lots of hot air balloons. You know, and so in this game, I think we found that, you know, that ideation process more difficult than we've ever done before, which is not to say, you know, that's not a bad thing necessarily. It just makes you think further outside the box than maybe you have done previously. And one of the pitches that our design group came up with, and which came from one of our like absolutely all-time Halo fans that we have in our design team, Mike, was, you know, what if we were racing against like a pelican from Halo? And we were like, okay. But the pitch was, it's like an AR experience, you know, it's like sort of augmented reality. We took it from there, and the execution, as I think one of your colleagues saw at Gamescom, and as everyone I think will see not too distant future when we're actually going to sort of show it to everybody pre-launch, is amazing. And it takes very much its inspiration from a mission way back in the original Halo game, if you remember the Silent Cartographer.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And if you remember that and you're kind of as big a Halo fan as Mike is, which to be honest, few are, you'll get a ton of references out of it, as well as having just a really cool unexpected showcase event as well.
Sweet. So you guys start with it and then 343... probably in the spirit of keeping it in the family says, okay, like I guess theoretically they could have they could have said no, but
they'd have been perfectly within their rights to say no. You know what I mean? They own Halo. They're the stewards of Halo.
Yeah.
They were great right from the start. I think perhaps because they loved the way the Warthog looked in Forza, they were really forthcoming with assets. There are a ton of Halo assets outside of the Warthog. In this particular, it's like a five minute experience.
Sweet.
Or something like that. They've been absolutely great with it.
See, I'm just waiting for the Bugatti in the next Halo now.
Yes.
The crossover the other way.
Now, speaking of being all in the family, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, since I last saw you, you are now officially part of Microsoft Studios.
That's
and
right.
I imagine the day-to-day probably hasn't changed a lot, but how did you react to that news when you heard it? How are you feeling about it, and does it?
You're right. So that kind of happened end of May, start of June, and you guys obviously heard about it in that really cool moment on stage when Phil announced not just us, but you know, a number of other sort of new additions to the family as well, which was great. I think the answer to your first point is really, yeah, you're right. There hasn't been enough time since then for really, I think, anyone within the studio, with the exception of, you know, maybe a handful of people who interact more closely with, you know, business stuff. I don't think anyone will really have noticed the day-to-day changes or that there have been any. Partially that's about the amount of time, and I think partially it's about the stage of project we've been at during that period, you know. So from end of May through E3 through the summer towards launch is very much a period of very intensive sort of coordinated work within the studio just to make sure that we're hitting quality and that we're closing out in the right way. And I think that's probably been very like, you know, previous closeouts on Horizon Project in that regard. To the second part of your question, how did I feel about it? I think certainly the leadership at the studio have felt that it's the right direction for us to be going in. It was the right point in time for us to take a relationship which we've had with Xbox almost since we started Playground Games, and pretty much since we started Playground Games, and which has been, I think, hugely positive, hugely mutually beneficial, and has seen, you know, that trajectory we talked about earlier in terms of the games, in terms of quality, in terms of audience as well. It was the right time to take that relationship to the next level in order to achieve more even than we have done as an independent.
Right. You dated for a while. It's a serious relationship.
Quite a long time,
actually.
Well, yeah.
So you finally got to the altar. Like, what employee number are you at Playground, out of curiosity?
I'm one or two, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so this was probably a good deal for you then too. I don't know how that stuff works, but it can't be a bad deal for you if you're employee number one or two.
Like I say, I think when we announced it to, you know, to the whole of the staff, there was a spontaneous round of applause, which kind of happened. And the context for that is that most of us are British and therefore far too reserved to applaud spontaneously at a lot of things. And we kind of took that as a very good, a good first sign that it was something which was welcomed by, you know, by the staff as a whole. I think we do believe that today and for the future, it is a very good thing for the staff.
Excellent. Well, I got a couple more questions for you, and then you're going to hang out. We're just going to talk about some Xbox news and do our thing.
Awesome.
This week on Locked is brought to you by Chegg Study. Chegg helps students find scholarships, search course reviews, and rent textbooks for cheap. Right now, you can get $5 off your first month subscription by going to chegg.com/unlocked. That's chegg.com/unlocked and using the promo code unlocked at checkout. I got to ask you about, so again, I don't want to sort of put you on the spot too badly, but I mean, Horizon 3, it is an incredible game, and hopefully you're about to top it with 4, but I'm sort of curious, what does a postmortem look like for you guys on a game that does that well from critically and commercially? Like, what's an example? Give me an example of something that your team thought wasn't great about Forza Horizon 3.
Huh. That's a good question. Let me answer it kind of broadly,
sure,
and high level. Postmortems, you know, like multiple, are things that we do pretty close after launch. I think we let dust settle a little bit, but then we get into them and we do see them as a very much an important part of the process. It's easy to think in the context of Forza Horizon 3, you know, a game which, you know, exceeded our expectations along pretty much every axis you care to mention.
Good.
That it would all be rosy. That's absolutely not the case. You know, there are many dimensions to judging the success when we postmortem a game. And many things, I think, and this is the most important part of postmorteming, many areas that we can improve, become better, become more efficient, make fewer mistakes in development, mm-hmm. Which ultimately result in better games for our fans, for our players, at the end of the day. You're putting me on the spot to try and remember.
I'm just sort of curious. I'm not trying to.
I think to sort of, you know, give you some kind of guide. The things I would mention as things that you know bubbled out of postmortems you'd be get like, huh, I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, they're often very procedural or very sort of production related,
sure,
about the way we tackle problems or the
efficiency related kind
of
things.
Yeah, absolutely. And oftentimes what you find from postmortems is that the things that bubble out are the things which made staff's life, you know, less than perfect when making the game, rather than things which, you know, caused features to come out less than perfect in
right.
the end.
Makes sense. Well, something else that came out of Horizon 3 I got to ask you about, because again, you haven't been here in a while. How did the Hot Wheels thing come about? Like, I know, Tom, you love the Hot Wheels thing as well. It's like, who approaches who? Can you kind of give me the origin story on that?
So that's, I think that's another example of a relationship between Forza and, you know, a partner, in this case Hot Wheels, which had existed for, you know, for some time before. You know, there had been a handful of Hot Wheels cars in Motorsport 6, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously Hot Wheels is a huge toy brand, you know, a huge sort of toy/automotive brand, I guess. They have that crossover, and therefore making Forza a perfect partner, I think, probably just looking for the perfect execution that made sense for both of those games. So that was, it was when we started looking at, you know, what our expansions would be, in particular what our second expansion would be for Forza Horizon 3. It was an idea that actually came from Turn 10, who said, "Hey, have you considered this?" And I would love to say that, you know, I was the visionary who said, yeah, absolutely. This will be amazing. We should go do this. But I was the guy going, I don't get it, and took a bunch of people, I guess, convincing me over time just how wrong I was, and I think just how wrong I was initially is borne out by just how successful the pack was. And also by how brilliantly the team executed against that idea, which could have gone in, like, you know, a dozen different directions, any of which probably, you know, wouldn't have been as successful or as almost iconic as what, you know, they came out with.
It's obviously a better fit for Horizon than Motorsport, right?
I think it kind of boils down, you have to build the track. I think that was the thing that the team who worked in that realized, is that you have to go all in on that Hot Wheels fantasy.
Yeah.
And the direction they took, which I think was really smart, was, you know, let's not overthink how huge Hot Wheels tracks can exist within, you know, even a world like Horizons, where the suspension of disbelief is probably slightly higher than in Motorsport. They just went, let's just think of a reason why this can exist and go do it. And as a result, they created this really brilliant expansion.
That's so good.
Well, it's funny, too, with that expansion, because even though it is so absurd, to be frank, right, that you have these giant orange loops and T-Rexes, it interestingly added a very down-to-earth sort of race style to Horizon that Horizon 3 was missing, or not missing, but just Horizon 3 didn't really before that have just sort of straight go-as-fast-as-you-can racetracks.
Yeah.
And I thought it was so funny that that very kind of base racing experience came from the silliest possible place was so cool.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah, it's kind of it favored the high end cars, the supercars.
Right.
It focused on speed because speed is really absolutely necessary if you're gonna do a loop-de-loop or you're going to jump over, I don't know, an island or something like that. So that came as part of the absurdity of the concept, but it also, yeah, gave fans, I think, a great experience that they weren't having as well.
Mm-hmm. So now we've talked about there's some history with the studio and with the franchise now. When you look back on Horizon 1, what do you see?
A game of which I think we are all still incredibly proud. Like I personally see in it us hunting for, to really tie down exactly what Horizon was. You can see in it that there are elements of it, I think, which still show a team wrestling with some of the ideas that we were having and how best to express them. But it's a game that I went back to when we did the 4K One X enhanced version. And which still incredibly holds up today in terms of visuals. Again, Wizards. I don't,
you said it now, not me.
I don't really.
It's official now.
I feel like it's entered the lexicon. It still looks great. It still plays great. It's very much the start of the journey we've been on with Horizon. You can see the directions where we're going to go with some things. You can see, like I say, some of the things that we were still struggling to work out at that time. But unequivocally, very proud of that game.
At the risk of giving your PR team a heart attack, I'm just sort of curious while you're here. What, do you have a lot of involvement with the other project going on, or are you sort of mostly heads down with Horizon?
I think they're running to
to turn off the microphone.
Yeah, they're going to rugby tackle me. I have been involved with that.
Good,
right from the start. Yeah.
It comforts me to know that you're involved. No disrespect to anybody else there, but yes, I look forward to hopefully. Well, maybe when that spins up, I'll get to see you more than once every 2 years.
Who knows?
Right?
Yeah,
we'll
absolutely.
See. We'll end this by asking. After another 2 year odyssey with a Horizon game, are you gonna what's the plan for you? Are you gonna duck out to a tropical island with no internet connection whatsoever, or are you just gonna be like in there with the community? Sort of how do you like to decompress personally after a project finishes?
Yeah, that's a good question. We are getting towards that time. The way game development works these days is that you don't get that sort of that kind of cycle so much. Like, oh, we're working incredibly hard to finish this thing, and now we're done and relax. I mean, I think in some ways it probably never did, but certainly with the way games are going these days, and I personally think it's a great thing for gamers as well, that games are supported post-launch. And certainly our intent with Forza Horizon 4 is to continue to support the game, is to continue to bring new things to it. On a regular basis, that's something that we're investing in this time more than we ever have done before, and which will yield, I think, a game which changes substantively, from launch for months and
sure.
years afterwards. All of which is to say, it doesn't have that same sort of
right. But you still get
end.
A vacation at some point. Right? I hope.
I hope
they're treating
hope
you
so
okay.
Too,
your
yeah.
new corporate overlords at Microsoft.
No, they're very good. I think I'm going to go away on holiday. I have a two daughters. One of whom is in school now, so we're kind of restricted to school vacations, holidays. I think we'll go away in October.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. All right, let's do some news. Then I can stop hogging the microphone. I can't help myself when
it's
you're
great conversations.
Here.
Honestly, just nice to be here for those things too. I'm just like, oh yes.
So a number of stories this week, a new special edition Xbox One X, and not just a bundle, an actual different console. It's Robot White is the official name of the color, and it's part of a Fallout 76 bundle. You're seeing it there if you're watching on video. Maybe it's just my Xbox 360 nostalgia that's tugging at my heartstrings, but that's a real pretty console.
Mm-hmm.
An X in white. I mean, I know people are like, well, it looks just pretty much just like an S. Well, but it's got better guts in it.
So. But it's an X.
It's an X now. So loving the sight of that. You can get that as part of this bundle. It's a $500 bundle. You'll get everything you see there if you're watching on video. But the console, regular white controller, robot white controller, and the game, Fallout 76 as well. Separate to that, though, the Elite controller, which has been the topic of much conversation in the do you use the Elite? Are you a wheel guy? How do you prefer to play?
I have an Elite at home. Yeah,
you can't go back right? once you've used it. So the Elite's been kind of weirdly MIA. Like you kind of can't find it. People are wondering, is there a version 2 coming? Maybe there still is. We still can't get an answer, but we do have a new Elite controller. It is a robot white. It's not part of this bundle. It is separate, but a white Elite controller, that's a temptation right
looks
there.
Very nice. And I've wanted an Elite forever, and it always comes up when I look for it. It's just unavailable, and I'm just like, yep. Well, maybe next time. Then I remember, like, oh, yeah, I should get an Elite now. And I'm like, oh, just kidding. So now's my time.
Here's your chance.
I'm so excited.
Here's your chance, Miranda. Yeah, it's glad to see that. So it's the same. It's $150 for the Elite controller.
The Elite did a thing with the paddles on the back.
Yes.
It's so funny to me because I feel like almost they struck on an idea that's just too good, right? Like I don't want those paddles to be restricted to some $150 special only if you want it controller. Whatever the next console generation is, I hope both – every system available has paddles on the backs of the controllers because that's such a smart idea and it's so useful that I just want that to be – I want that to be normal.
Hey, Ralph, how come – so you guys, both Forza franchises are really good about using the haptic feedback in the triggers.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I feel like basically no other developer – you can probably count them on one hand, the number of other developers and games that have put those to use. They're fun, right? That's fun, especially with a car with gas and brake, and you can feel the brakes grab.
I know exactly what you mean. But I do think maybe, you know, like the gas, the brake is the perfect expression of that technology. It's right there for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it adds so much, and it, you know, it's standard. So it would be lovely to see more games using it.
Yeah, it was right before I got a chance to play the first Horizon 3 before it had come out. I heard. I was reading reviews and I was seeing other people talk about it, and I saw so many reviews praising the controller rumble. And I was like, that seems like a weird thing to like call attention to is control. Like, that's not a new thing. And then I played it with an Xbox One controller and I was like, I get it.
I
understand.
Yeah. I remember playing Forza Motorsport 5 when it came out on the Xbox One, and
yeah.
And that was a game changer. You know, that was the first time you'd experienced that. And
yeah, as I recall, it was at launch anyway. It was Motorsport 5, and I think audience can correct me if I'm wrong. I believe NBA 2K14. I think they do. There's something with it. I don't know if it's when you're using the option trigger and then dribble, and it's like the ball hitting the court. Something with it. But yeah, it's sad. I wish more developers would put it to good use. You gotta just. Tell everybody, use it.
Right.
Tell everybody, tell everybody in the company to use it. Not everybody in first party studios.
I'm not sure what you think my job is, but
it's not that. It's not that. You don't just
I'll take a note though.
Yeah, it's
all other developers on speed dial.
Group text message.
Guys, yeah. Ryan says.
No one should listen to me ever. All right, EA. So the first. Every year it feels like there's somebody that delays a big fall game that pushes sometimes a little bit, sometimes a lot, pretty late. We have our first one this year, and it's Battlefield 5, pardon me, as the release date for Battlefield. They were going to be sandwiched right between Red Dead and Call of Duty. They've moved out a month to November 20th. The GM of DICE, Oscar Gabrielson, explain the reasoning in a blog post, pointing to player feedback as the primary reason behind the delay, thanking the tens of thousands of players who've played both during closed alphas or in demo booths at E3 and Gamescom, and highlighting positive feedback, blah, blah. Anyway, they're saying, he says, they are committed. They've settled on the later launch date to, quote, get it right. Ralph, I don't know if in your – you haven't had this with Horizon. I don't know if you've ever – in earlier in your career had a game that that was sort of pushed out relatively late, and if it's a, you know, a morale, like if it's a morale hit at all, or if it's more just the opposite of a morale boost of, okay, we've got some more time to get things sorted here.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't speak to that particular scenario at all. I don't know what's driven that, but yeah, we've done well, I think, on Horizon games, you know, always to land them at the right point. I have worked on games in the very distant past, you know, which I've slipped, and it totally depends on the circumstances and the reasons for the slip. If it's an amount of time that allows you to hit better quality by release, then I think pretty much always the team is positive about it.
Because, sure,
you know, teams are all about delivering great games, I think if that's the case, certainly in my experience, that was a good thing.
Well, hopefully it is here, but does conveniently also get them clear of both Call of Duty and Red Dead Redemption 2 by you know, almost 30 days. So
yeah, it's interesting to see the reasoning for this explicitly being getting the feel of the game right. I feel like a lot of the times when we see a month delay like this, or we see a kind of late in the game delay like this, we don't as explicitly see the developers say, we got feedback at this recent event, and these are the things we are spending more time working on. I think that's kind of rare, at least in what I've seen.
Yeah, I think you maybe get like the vague player feedback has said this, but they're pointing specifically to things that they want to adjust, and I think that's great. Like having that transparency is always nice, especially if you were one of the people that gave them that feedback. I think that's a good feeling to know that.
Yeah, they're noting gameplay tempo adjustments, soldier visibility, player friction. So they do get into some specifics here. So seems like a win-win for everybody in this case. The developers get some time to tune a better game at launch, because it's, you know, you generally, Ralph, correct me if you feel differently, but these days, especially with social media and the conversation online around a game, it's tough to get a second chance to make a first impression, isn't it?
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Although I think maybe these days there are some examples you can point to of games that have done that. You
know, definitely.
But certainly you look at the first impression you make when your game launches, when people first get their hands on it, as being absolutely, absolutely crucial. Yeah. It makes perfect sense that you would want that to be as good as it can be.
I mean,
the people that do get a second chance from it usually have to spend 2 years developing and continuing to support this game that made a bad first impression to finally get it to that point where people will give it another chance. Like if you look at No Man's Sky or Rainbow Six Siege, all these games that really spent a long time dedicated to updating the game, and now people have kind of come around on in terms of what the kind of public opinion is like.
Well, Tom, both you and Miranda, we did a PAX panel this past weekend, and we just did a little fun with the folks that attended. We sort of crowd ranked. We put together a little, what would be the top 10 Xbox One games of all time to date, and we sort of started with our own list, and then invited submissions from the panel audience members as well. And I was pleasantly surprised that on this topic of second chances, like Master Chief Collection seems to have kind of won its way back.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
There was a very, very enthusiastic reception to it at the panel from you know, not even speaking of us, from the crowd, which I was, because, you know, all you hear online about that game generally, the noisiest parts around Master Chief Collection over the last couple of years have been not so positive things. So it does seem like it's, you can get there, but it can take a while to win people back. So hopefully EA will indeed be able to make a better first impression than they would have had they shipped in October. Next up this week, BioWare announcing that all post-launch story content for Anthem will be free. The news comes courtesy of Game Rant, credit to them, which reports that BioWare made the announcement during their PAX West panel. Speaking of, BioWare hasn't given any further details about what that post-launch content will look like, but it looks like there might be some paid other things, since they specifically cited free story content, which I'm sure they'll be balancing that carefully as well. So, Ralph, you your game, I don't know if it's fair to call Horizon quite a game as service. I don't know if you'd classify it as that, but you do need to support it with a pretty long tail, and the sort of thinking and planning around what's paid and what's not has to be it's become more prevalent in recent last couple of years, hasn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, whether what your definition of game as a service is, I guess depends. But I certainly look back on Forza Horizon 3 as a game that we launched with an explicit intention to continue supporting.
Yeah.
And you know, you can obviously, I think Forza has quite a rich history of creating post-launch content.
Definitely.
With Horizon 3, we created the Forzathon feature very deliberately as something which would continue giving players new challenges and new things to do on a weekly basis. With Horizon 4, as I kind of alluded to earlier, our intent is that, you know, launch is really just the beginning, and I think we are definitely transitioning into thinking about Horizon 4 as something which, you know, will live. That we will continue to support and bring new things to, not just in terms of expansions, which, you know, the first two of which are this time included in Ultimate Edition, which
yes.
I think is great. Not just in terms of the car pass again, which is inside the Ultimate Edition, and which will deliver, I think it's like two new cars to your garage with every season, which is like real world week. But also just, I think, quality of life improvements, community requests. Certainly we have, this is going back to your list of things we should do, but, you know, kind of a roadmap of things that we want to bring to the game, you know, over the coming months, which we're going to tie into the seasons concept. So the seasons, you know, each lasts a real world week, which means,
yeah, that's cool.
Kind of a year in Horizon lasts for 4 weeks. At the end of each, we're going to bring a new update to the game, which brings, you know, new content, new features, new gameplay or experiences. And that's going to be free for all our players.
That's awesome. Have you had to staff up a little bit to support the game more in the post launch phase than in previous projects?
Absolutely, yeah, and I think, you know, that's part of this new investment we're making, because, you know, when a game team rolls off a project, you know, typically it gets, you know, divided amongst a bunch of smaller tasks. But it's difficult to think about supporting a game in a sort of live scenario in the way we're discussing without that taking away a resource who are working on, you know, other things, the next thing. So, yeah, we've been hiring for our live team. We've been bringing in, I think, new skill sets that we haven't had in the studio before, because it demands a dialogue with our community.
Sure.
It demands us to be listening to what they're saying about the game and reacting to that. So, yeah, it's a different paradigm for us, but it's one we're really excited about. It's not just a very modern way of thinking about it. I think it's a very consumer-friendly way of thinking about it as well.
Seems like it, yeah. I think Microsoft in general, I'll say, has done a pretty good job studio-wide of being pretty fair and good to players. Like, we talk about Master Chief Collection all the time, Halo 5 all the time as Master Chief Collection just got a huge update.
Massive update, yeah.
Almost 4 years later, which is impressive unto itself. But Halo 5 has been – they've added tons of new maps, new modes, all kinds of stuff totally at no cost to people. And Gears 4 had a similar model. So that's great to see. Remedy, your fellow European studio, not quite stablemates. They were a second party, I guess is what – the public tends to refer to that as, with Alan Wake and Quantum Break most recently. They have announced sort of a new little initiative at the studio, Vanguard, a new team that will focus on spinning up, quote, ongoing live multiplayer game experiences. They announced it on their website, and Remedy describes this group as a small group of people working in an unconventional way with an aim to develop something quickly and independently inside of an established organization. They'll be using the Northlight technology, the sort of their in-house tech. I know you guys, of course, use your pseudo in-house tech that you've co-developed with Turn 10. But it's great to have a developer here to help explain this. So is this kind of effectively like this isn't necessarily an uncommon thing in development, right? Where are they going to be kind of maybe prototyping new ideas and seeing what works by the sounds of it?
I have literally no idea apart from what you just read out. But yeah, certainly, these days, building on established technology is the price of doing business. You know, everybody has their own tech base or works on an established one. The cost of spinning one of those up afresh is astronomical. So it makes perfect sense that, you know, that you would try out new things within an existing tech base.
Yeah, I'd be really curious to see what sort of multiplayer things Remedy would be.
Yeah, with Remedy specifically, it's just like, I mean, it could be cool. They said they want to turn around things quickly. And so I'm very curious to see what they produce and like how quickly we're actually talking about here.
Yeah, my vibe from this and from the way that this statement is phrased is we shouldn't be expecting Remedy to be making Destiny likes and,
right,
and
right.
multiplayer shooters in the next, you know, year and a half. I mean, they say, yeah, unconventional way, spinning up something quickly, and they also describe it as multiplayer game, ongoing live multiplayer game experiences, which, you know, could just be marketing talk for game, but it also could mean that this might be something different, something we haven't seen before, not just a traditional multiplayer game.
Right.
They could be doing things that are a little weirder, a little off the beaten path, which is kind of Remedy's style to branch out a little bit like that.
Yeah, they're hard at work on Control now, right, which is their next big single-player, third-person cinematic single-player game. Do you, when you're at Gamescom or E3, Ralph, do you get any chance to kind of go out and visit with developer friends and see their stuff, or are you just chained to your booth the whole time?
Unfortunately, no. The whole E3 Gamescom experience for me is being inside a small room that you'll be familiar with visiting for basically the duration of the show. So I probably see fewer games at those shows than literally anyone else.
Oh, but, that's
yay!
Yeah. Well, you. I think I came and saw you for the Horizon 4 demo at E3 on, might have been the last day of the show, and you were cheery, and it might as well have been you held it together well if you were getting stir crazy in that room.
I'm a professional.
Well, you're four Horizons into it at this point. You're well practiced at the very least. Finally, this week, this will be probably talked about a lot online, and sure it already is. Wouldn't necessarily expect to be playing multiplayer games, pardon me again, on your Xbox with PlayStation 4 people anytime soon. It's a growing source of consternation from fans. And according to The Independent, Sony CEO Kenichiro Yoshida said during Germany's IFA Electronics Convention on this subject, quote, on cross-platform, our way of thinking is always that PlayStation is the best place to play. Fortnite, I believe, partnered with PlayStation 4, is the best experience for users. That's our belief. So I don't know if he may have been asked specifically about the Fortnite thing. But actually, we already open some games as cross-platform with PC and some others. So we decide based on what is the best user experience. That is our way of thinking for cross-platform. Mike Ibarra from the Xbox leadership team has been pretty outspoken about this on Twitter of really trying to respectfully hold Sony's feet to the fire on this a little bit and say, hey, this isn't great for players. And don't worry, Ralph, I'm not going to put you on the spot for this one.
Appreciate it.
I look into my panel here, but it's, you know, Sony clearly seemingly not budging on despite any public pressure or fan feedback on this. And I don't know, guys.
This statement doesn't say anything we didn't already know. I don't.
True.
I think it just keeps saying what they have been saying, and kind of shows that at least nothing is publicly shifting in that regard. I mean, I've been very vocal about that. It's getting kind of embarrassing, is what I said. That they're being very, very, very unrelenting in this regard. I really, really like that I can do things like play Horizon 3 with people who are on Xbox and other things like that.
He's a PC guy, is what he's talking about.
I am, mostly. I think that this doesn't really change much in terms of – all it tells us is that nothing has changed, at least outwardly.
They're just going to keep beating that drum, and I think that's going to be consistent. Like, they don't seem like they want to budge, so I wouldn't really expect anything. different.
I mean, to be fair, for all we know, they are exploring the possibility, technically, politically, whatever. Sony's a big company. They could very well be exploring it behind the scenes.
Oh, sure.
But for now, need to maintain the public PR line of this.
Also, it's their right to do this.
It is.
Sad thing. Like, I mean, it's a bummer because I agree that I think it would be better for gamers as a whole if we all could
kind of
play on whatever platform. But Sony doesn't need to bend to public pressure, even if I disagree with it. Like, they're allowed to make this choice as much as I think is a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Microsoft's been waiting for Sony to look bad for, like, the last 5 years, so they're probably sitting there going, yay! No, they're not doing that. It's not how that works. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if this changes someday, but don't expect it to anytime soon. All right. Microsoft did not send out their weekly email with the holiday week of everything that's coming out on Xbox.
Checks out.
We do know we do have a big game as a service, big expansion pack. Destiny 2 Forsaken is out. Destin is not here because he's actually streaming it right now as we record this. So if you are a Destiny fan, look for Destin's coverage, his review coming up on IGN, and we'll see what the Forsaken adds to the Destiny experience. But marketplace-wise, Miranda, we've got a couple new big games added to Game Pass.
Yes. Big one, of course, is Halo the Master Chief Collection. So if you only more value to Game Pass, every time I see someone get a new Xbox, I'm like, have you got Game Pass? Because you're set. And yes. Then, so we got
You're going into Game Pass, Ralph.
Day and date.
Right,
yeah,
in.
Absolutely.
October 2nd.
October 2nd, yeah, yes. That's right.
Yes, we got
that's
that.
Crazy. Yeah. it's just insane to me that they're putting games that big in
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah, it's a great service. So we have that and Quantum Break. So those are now on
Speaking of Remedy, yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed Quantum Break. Did you guys happen to play through either
yes,
one of you?
I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, it's that last boss, but other than that, really good.
Yeah.
I really appreciated the... I liked sitting there and watching the live action stuff.
Me too. It's like a unique experience.
I felt it was like a nice reward for I went through a mission and then I was like, okay, I get to just watch something for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those concepts that I really want someone to find incredible success with because I think it's so cool conceptually. And I like if Quantum Break had done better, and it's not saying it did bad, just if Quantum Break had been more successful than it was, I love this idea of this world where we have a Quantum Break TV show that is running in conjunction with DLC for the game and the two affect each other or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a weird, cool world I want to live in
one day. Tom, what was the MMO that had a sci-fi TV show?
Defiance?
That they actually tried that.
Yeah, and they're relaunching the game right now. I think they might have just relaunched it. I'm not entirely sure, but yeah, the show kind of petered out, I believe. But they're trying to spin the game up as an individual thing now.
But if I remember right, the events of the show were supposed to affect the game and vice versa. Like they were supposed to sort of intersect in some way. But
right, and that's what I'm saying. No one's really like hit it out of the park with that idea yet. I really want someone.
It's definitely a tough one to accomplish.
It is. It's extremely difficult.
I couldn't even imagine like having to. Like produce all of that and figure out how what affects what and then seeing like, well, which one's doing better for us and like kind of countering on that and oof.
Hard enough to make just a game, I imagine.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was just thinking.
Also produce a show at the same time. Good luck.
All right, Miranda, what are our September games with gold as September gets underway here?
So for September, we have Prison Architect from September 1st to the 30th on Xbox One. We have Live Lock on September 16th to October 15th on Xbox One. Then for Xbox One and Xbox 360, we have the following games. LEGO Star Wars 3, The Clone Wars. Always so fun to play those. And then
Traveler's Tales, another UK developer.
Mm-hmm.
They're solid every single time out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then we have the Sega Vintage Collection Monster World. That's September 16th through the 30th.
All right, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ralph, humorous for a second. We like to play a little Xbox trivia every week. It's fan-submitted questions. I try to stump these guys. You're just playing for fun, pride here. But I did semi-intentionally choose this question of the ones in the email because... It's another UK developer, so I'm hoping maybe you might have a little home field advantage on this
one. We'll
see. It's about Time Splitters 2, or the Time Splitters series, I should say. So Nick Kersey from Ventura, California says, in light of the recent Time Splitters rumors and speculation he's referring to, there was some chatter that maybe it was going to come back. We'll see. There's been nothing on that lately, but... It says, let's talk about Time Splitters 2, the first entry in the series released on an Xbox console. It came to the original Xbox. It was developed by Free Radical, a company made up of including ex-Rare employees who'd previously worked on games like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. He says, Time Splitters 2 draws many inspirations from these two Nintendo 64 classics. Which level, if you remember your Time Splitters well, which level from the original GoldenEye, and an all-time classic game, served as the greatest inspiration for Time Splitters 2's opening level? I have no idea on this question, to be fair, so I am completely outclassed on this one. But Time Splitter 2's opening level inspired by what GoldenEye level? Was it the Egyptian level, silo level, dam level, or frigate mission? You look a little confident over there, Ralph.
I know.
He's got it. He's got it. So I'm going to look. Tom is shaking his head.
I got
nothing on this.
So I also have zero clue, but it's always my goal to get it wrong. So we're trying to keep one of, I am at least trying to keep one of our old co-hosts in the lead.
We play for there's a fan-made trophy at the end of the year for whoever has the most correct answers. Mm-hmm. So there's like a metagame going on.
I just really want Alana to win.
And Miranda wants
at least be ahead of me.
She's trying to lose.
Yeah, I'm very bad at trivia, so this is my my way of playing on that, I guess.
All right, well, Miranda,
on my poor
decisions. How do you want to try to get this wrong?
I don't know if this is wrong, but I'm going to go C. Damn.
Okay. Like Tom?
So here's my thinking, because these are both games that are all games that I'm very familiar with, but haven't thought about or like looked at in a long time.
It's been a minute since this has been...
My thinking is Egyptian is a red herring because it's, time travel, so they want you to think about that one. My thinking is also Dam is a red herring because Dam is GoldenEye's first level, not Time Splitter's first level. So I'm going to go Silo. B.
Okay. Well, all right. And it's which level from the original GoldenEye served as the greatest inspiration?
Yeah.
So we are talking about...
I know. Not,
okay, just making sure.
I'm going Silo.
All right. Ralph, you're very confident.
I was confident, and then now I've heard those answers, and maybe I'm slightly less confident.
No, don't be talking in mind. Go with your gut.
I don't know what I'm doing.
So
I don't know what I'm doing. So
I remember my most vivid memory from Time Splitters 2 was in a kind of present day scenario. So I think you're right. I think the Egyptian thing's a red herring. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Dam.
Okay.
Oh, with that?
Okay. Yeah.
I can't remember the first level. I spent so much time in custom maps in Time Splitters that's all I can think about.
Because when you first read the question, I was thinking it was either Dam or Facility, and then that wasn't one of your multiple choice, so I don't know. I can't win this competition anyway, so...
well, you're going to go home... with some pride, because yes, you got it right, which means Miranda also got it right. It was dance. Yes.
Could have gone with Egypt.
I overthought
well
it.
Well done.
Yeah.
You're within three of Alana now. Plenty of year to go.
Yeah.
About 4 months.
Continue my sabotage.
So good stuff. Great job, Ralph, on that question.
I will really love it if Miranda just fails upwards and tries to get everyone wrong. Everyone right.
I should have gone, like, you had a good point with red herring, and I should have done that. Should have thought it through a little more. But I like to answer for C. C is a good letter. That was always my guess on
test. Yeah,
it's like, if I don't know what it is, then I'll just
always guess C. That's
right. Usually my thing.
It's old school.
Yeah.
All right. If you would like to try and stump the panel, please send your Xbox trivia question to unlocked@ign.com. I need 4 multiple choice answers in there, and please note the correct one in your email, and we'll play again next week. That brings us to the end. Ralph Fulton, seriously, thank you so much for taking an hour plus out of your trip here to come hang out with us.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's always great to see you. And you here means I'm about to play a new Forza Horizon game, which has traditionally been a very good thing. So for that, I am very appreciative. And yeah, just congrats on launch. And I wish you guys the best. And I'm glad you're part of the Microsoft family officially. And I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future with their full and total resources and power of industry at your disposal. But thank you so much for coming on. Do you want to plug? I guess you're not here for your health, so if you want to tell people about which I guess standard edition, ultimate edition. You get the early access, I think.
Yeah, So the game is out on October the 2nd on Xbox One, One X, and Windows 10 PCs. As we mentioned, it is in Xbox Game Pass on the same day, which is, as you were saying earlier, brilliant, brilliant value for Xbox players. But if you buy the Ultimate Edition, you get early access, and I think that begins on the 28th of September. Nice. So not long now.
Plus those two future expansion
expansions, Car Pass, and a laundry list of things that I'm not sure I can remember off the top of my head. But there's a ton of value in Ultimate Edition this time that I think we're really proud of.
Excellent, love it. And do we want to follow you on Twitter? Do you want to give out your your Twitter
account? Honestly, I'm not sure that anyone benefits from that.
Fair
at
enough.
All. As we get into the British soccer season, that's following me is it's a zero sum game.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I got the baseball playoffs coming up. I'm in the same boat. Miranda.
Hello, you can follow me at Havoc Rose, that's Havoc with a K, on Twitter, Instagram, and pretty much anywhere. I don't really have a lot to plug right now because we're going to start working on things that we can't talk about. I still have another project that I can't talk about. But we did go to PAX, and there's a lot of great coverage from that. So check it out.
Outstanding. Tom.
Yeah, you can find me at Tom R. Marks on Twitter, and probably in a Bugatti that has a Pikachu on it in Horizon next month.
You get down with the liveries at all? You get
love
there.
It.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
absolutely. I make very poor ones myself, but benefit from the many people who make great ones.
Yes, the fact that you can just immediately click, oh, this person's better at art than me, and just take it. Yeah,
that's what I do.
So good. And you can follow me on Twitter at @DMC_Ryan. Unfiltered. You've got Cam Weber, head of EA Sports. That episode's up now. And I usually don't announce these, but I'll mention with Spider-Man out. Yes, it's a PS4 game, but it's big deal game. Ted Price was in here, interviewed him for Unfiltered. That'll be out next week. And it's relevant for Xbox fans because we talk a lot about Sunset Overdrive, which we love so much. The game's so good. And I think, Dan, am I doing this plug on the teleprompter here?
That's for after.
That's for later? Okay, so we'll do that later. But in the meantime, a friendly reminder, if you're not already watching us early, catch us on Tuesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on unlocked.ign.com. Or if you prefer it on YouTube or in podcast form, it just hits the regular time on Wednesday afternoons. So thanks again to Ralph Fulton from Playground Games, Miranda Sanchez, Tom Marks. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. This was episode 360. We'll see you back here next week.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.